This is the Mix Coach Podcast, episode 31. If you stay tuned, we're going to talk about drum replacement and when it's good and when you should not do it.
Welcome to the Mix Coach Podcast, the podcast dedicated to making your next recording your best recording.
Hey, welcome back to the podcast. Like I said in the intro, we're going to be talking today about sound replacement and drums and probably all other kinds of things.
Right. My main question, I guess, was as a professional mixer, what's your policy on drum replacement? Like, when is it a good idea? You know, basically your top three reasons for you reach for like a sound replacer.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, again, it depends on how much time you have, and time equals how much budget you have.
Right.
So, I mean, what people don't factor in is to a lot of times to properly trigger drums or replace drums, it takes, like I mentioned a few podcasts ago, that where it sounds professional is in the last 20%. Anybody can do the first 80% of drum replacement. Right. But the real covering your tracks of these drums were replaced happens in the last 20% of it.
Yeah.
So it really depends. If you factor that in, it really just depends on how much budget you got. And of course, if the drums sound good, replace them. But, you know, when I would typically, I only replace drums when I need to.
Okay.
And the need to is the real caveat here, because I could need to because they don't sound good.
Right.
I could need to because maybe there's too much hi-hat bleed in the snare mic, and the way I've got it compressed is not becoming to the drum sound in general. So that could be, you know, that I need to replace that, and I've done that before. It could be that the drums weren't played consistently enough.
Okay.
I've done that with kicks.
Like dynamics before, that sort of thing. Well, if they're hitting it too hard, or
not too hard usually. Usually it's that they're not hitting it consistently enough.
Like,
you know, I've mentioned to you before that when people listen to drum sounds or any sound in that instance, I know we've talked about this. It's, what did we call it? The attack principle.
Right.
Well, that applies to the drums too, in the fact that if, let's just say you're playing the drums or you're mixing drums, and every hit of the snare drum happens at, let's say, minus 3 dB.
Okay.
Minus 3 or 4 dB.
Okay.
So every time he hits it, he does that. And then one time or two times in a row, he hits it, and it goes all the way to 0 dB.
Mm.
So those two are louder than the rest of the track, right? Yeah. So the producer or the drummer, whoever, is going to say, the drums are too loud.
Just based on
So they're going to get, instead of you taking it apart and go, well, it's only those two, they're going to blanketly say, let's pull the snare drum down because it's too loud. Because the last thing they heard was the loud ones.
Right.
So sometimes if that happens, I may replace those two hits.
Nice. With a previous hit.
With a previous hit, exactly. Right. You don't, when you replace drums, it doesn't necessarily have to be with an out of the box sound replacer sound or something like that.
Right.
Usually when I replace drums that way, I replace them with their drums.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
There's a drummer in particular who when he plays from his knee.
Okay.
On the kick drum instead of from his heel. So his leg tends to bounce. And what happens is you get this boom, 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 instead of a boom, boom, that you're used to. And that's what you base everything on. But once you hear all that stuff in between, it messes the low end up.
Yeah.
So what you either have to do is cut some of that low end, which you don't want to do to a kick drum.
Right.
Or gate it. Which doesn't always, you know, sometimes it works, but usually what I'll do is I'll take a clean kick that he played and sound replace it with that kick. And then sometimes on sound replacer on the bottom right, you can set the ratio.
Right.
And a lot of times
I treat that
like a compressor almost.
Okay, I got
you. To where even if it was a hit that, say, happened at minus 3 dB, it will make it closer to the 0 dB and make every one of them like that.
Pretty consistent.
That's especially important in pop music and country music when, you know, and you know what? Every kind of music. Orchestral music is probably one of the most important because the more things you have, the less margin for error you have for messing with how loud something is.
Nice.
Like, for instance, an orchestrator, if you're mixing a big orchestra or something or a choral something that has tons and tons of tracks. If they hear one snare drum that trumps their string line or their timpani roll or whatever, they're going to ask you to turn it down.
Yeah, it's
so in those four instances, I will take and replace the snare drum. Sometimes it's just record, or maybe, you know, sometimes it was just not the right snare for the song.
Yeah.
Sometimes you'll replace it and
put like a more milder snare or a more aggressive snare, that sort of thing.
You might take a stick snare and replace it with a brush snare.
Okay.
I mean, but you know, these are like the things I'm telling you are things that literally can take hours to do and do it correctly.
Right.
So that's why I say, if you're trying to mix 10 songs in a day, you don't need to do any of this stuff. You need to get the best you can do and ask yourself, is this the best I can do with the time and the budget I have? And am I being responsible with what I'm doing? Because if you spend all day on a snare drum and it's a vocalist record and he's not going to care anyway,
right?
Then you really haven't been a good steward of the time you've been given.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. No, that makes perfect sense.
You know, some of the most popular, like the coolest records I've heard, have triggered drums in them. And they don't sound like they have trigger drums in it. One of my favorite records is the Johnny Lang Turnaround record. Of course, I've told you about that.
Yeah.
And I probably made you listen to it a bunch of times, too.
It's a good one.
I've been talking to Drew Ramsey, who was one of the producers on that. And I didn't realize that most of those drums are triggered.
Really? They don't sound like it at all.
No, they don't. Some of them are drum machine.
Okay.
Really? Programmed drums. Wow. Some of them are played. And some of them are played and quantized.
Okay.
So, because when you play a real drummer with a loop, you know, there's a lot of...
Right, there's a lot...
It can get really messy really quick. And sometimes you can trigger drums with accenting sounds. You don't have to replace a drum. You actually add a sound to the drums. Like, I'm sure you've heard the trick, you know, a sine wave.
Right.
A 50 hertz sine wave that's opened with the key.
Yeah,
from the kick itself, so that you have more low end.
Right.
Another way you can do that is, you know, boost the low end of it. But another thing you can do is, you know, trigger an 808 sound.
Yeah, I've done that before
for kick. And another thing I've done too is like when a drum sounded kind of just dead, and I wanted a pitch out of the thing. Sometimes I would take a conga that had a doo.
Nice.
And trigger a ring with a snare.
So basically add it with that.
Right.
Nice. That's good. That's good.
You can do that. So, I mean, you know, some people have a negative connotation of replacing drums, like you're cheating or something or whatever.
I mean, but I guess it's the same as tuning vocals and that sort of thing. But, I mean, I always viewed it as, you know, supplementing, you know. Really kind of adding to.
It is. Well, I mean, so it's a good idea to replace drums whenever you feel like it. It needs it, and whenever you have the time and budget to do that, you know, you can do that various ways. I've been loving lately, and there's a tutorial on this.
Okay.
there's a video on the website that talks about Massey's DRT. I forget what DRT stands for, but it's a great way, and that plugin is free. And of course, I'm thinking about buying the plugin, even though I don't need some of the features that aren't, you know, that are with the paid version. But, you know, you can literally take a drum and trigger it, drag it into an instrument track. And
it'll create a MIDI track for you?
Yeah, you can literally trigger a whole kit.
That's incredible.
With that thing. So you should replace drums when you feel like you that it needs it, and, you know, that you have the time and budget. When it's a bad idea, you were asking, you know, the other day, when is it a bad idea to trigger drums? It's a bad idea to trigger drums usually for me when it's a kind of a jazz tune with brushes and things like that.
So a lot of open stuff, it might sound robotic.
Yeah, it'll sound. Like, but I have even triggered with that before. It just depends on how consistent you want the drums to sound.
Yeah.
And in the jazz genre and big band and things like that, they don't mean for every note to be at the same volume. And that is really hard to emulate with, you know, triggering and drum machines and things like that. So,
yeah.
But you know, before we close with the drum triggering podcast here, let me say that I'll usually try to repair the drums before I trigger them.
Yeah.
In other words, here's compressors, one little trick you can use, like
EQs and that sort of thing.
Yeah, EQs, compressions, and here's one little trick too. I use, and I think there's a tutorial on this on YouTube that where you can actually separate with separate regions with what is it called? Apple U, the
strip silence.
Oh, strip silence. That's what it was.
Sorry, I actually had to push the button. So
we had to look that up. My brain's fried. strip silence. Where, like, let's just, for example, here's a real world example that I use almost every time I mix. When a drummer plays a snare, and you've got a good cracking sound on the snare, sometimes that's not the best EQ for a side stick hit. So rather than automate, because I don't like to automate this kind of stuff, why not duplicate that track, strip out all of the side sticks, put them on a different track. And that way, you can boost the volume, EQ it the way you need to, and you can literally just, you know, pull the side stick hits out of there, leave all the hi-hats that are in between on the original snare track. That mm-hmm. way, they're, you know, unaffected with the new EQ. But usually, I'll try to do something like that over triggering, because, like I said, 80% of the triggering is easy. The other 20% to make it sound like it's not triggered, it takes a little bit more time, and it's non-linear. It's right. Like, you know, it takes... It's non-linear.
Yeah.
And it'll take a lot longer than you think, so...
Oh, man.
John's phone is ringing, so we ought to just leave that in the podcast instead of try to edit it out. So we've had two things that make us look really real today. We had to look up the name of a plugin, and John's phone rang twice. And you'll have to leave a comment on the website to say who you think the phone call is from. Anyway, hey, thank you guys for coming in to tuning into the podcast, and I appreciate this time that I get to spend with you guys, maybe 15 or 20 minutes every week or so. It does a lot of good for me to just talk about this stuff, and I love the interaction I'm getting from the website, and y'all just keep on commenting and let me know if I can do anything to help you, okay? And we'll see you in a couple of weeks.
For a free download of Kevin's video called 5 Things Every Great Mixer Knows, head over to mixcoach.com/freetips.